ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Title: Indra Offenders Brihaspati. Text number 39. Suradvisham Sriyam Radvisham Sriyam Guptam Asanasyapi Vidyaya Achidya Dan Mahendraya Vaishnavya Vidyaya Vibhu. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The opulence of the demons, who are generally known as the enemies of the demigods, was protected by the talents and tactics of Sukracharya. But Vishwarupa, who was most powerful, composed a protective prayer known as Narayan Kavacha. By his intelligent mantra, he took away the opulence of the demons and gave it to Mahendra, the king of heaven. Purport. The distinction between the demigods, devas, and the demons, asuras, is that the demigods are all devotees of Lord Vishnu, whereas the demons are devotees of demigods like Lord Shiva, Goddess Kali, Goddess Durga. Sometimes the demons are also devotees of Lord Brahma. For example, Hiranyakashipu was a devotee of Lord Brahma, Ravana was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and Mahishasura was a devotee of Goddess Durga. The demigods are devotees of Lord Vishnu, Vishnu Bhakta Smitam Deva, whereas the demons, the Asura Tad Viparyaya, are always against the Vishnu Bhaktas or Vaishnavas. To oppose the Vaishnavas, the demons become devotees of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Kali, Durga, and so on. In the days of yore, many, many long years ago, there was animosity between the devas and the asuras, and the same spirit still continues, for the devotees of Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga are always envious of the Vaishnavas, who are devotees of Lord Vishnu. This strain between the devotees of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu has always existed. In the higher planetary systems, fights between the demons and the demigods continue for a long, long time. Herein we see that Vishwarupa made for the demigods a protective covering saturated with the Vishnu mantra. Sometimes the Vishnu mantra is called Vishnu Dwara, and the Shiva mantra is called Shiva Dwara. We find in the Shastras that sometimes the Shiva Dwara and Vishnu Dwara are employed in the fights between the demons and the demigods. The word Suradvisham, which in this verse means of the enemies of the demigods, also refers to the atheists. Srimad Bhagavatam elsewhere says that Lord Buddha appeared for the purpose of bewildering the demons or atheists. The Supreme Personality of Godhead always awards his benediction to devotees. The Lord Himself confirms this in Bhagavad Gita 9:31. Kuntiya patijanihi name bhakta pranasyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Verse, which is the last verse in the chapter, which has no purport. So we'll read that in order to conclude this whole theme. Translation: Vishwarupa, who was most liberal, spoke to King Indra, Sahasraksha, the secret hymn that protected Indra and conquered the military power of the demons. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 7th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Indra Offends His Spiritual Master, Brihaspati. Om Agyan to Brihaspati, or his spiritual master. This is a very instructive pastime in order to understand what is our position in devotional service. Yasya prasada bhagavad prasado, yasya prasadan naguti kutopi. Every morning we sing the prayers to the spiritual master as the beginning of the day's activity, because we honor the spiritual master as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's actually no difference between the spiritual master and the Lord, in that one is the representative of the Lord who accepts service on behalf of the Lord and serves the Lord. And the other is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is receiving service from his pure devotee. One is servitor Godhead and one is served Godhead. There's no difference. So one should and one must treat and honor the spiritual master as if the Lord were personally present. This is Vaishnav culture. This is Vaishnav philosophy. This is the absolute truth. We see in this particular pastime how calamities can arise by a displeasing the spiritual master. What was Indra's fault? Indra's fault was he was proud. They say pride goeth before the fall. Pride is an abomination to the Supreme Lord, and pride should be carefully destroyed by the principle of humble service to the Lord and to the Vaishnavas. Now, when one has a lot of opulence, when one has a lot of qualifications, when one has a lot of abilities, and others also see one in that position and honor one in that way, we might say it's very hard to become humble. There's two kinds of humility. Humility born of one's constitutional position and humility born of circumstance. Indra didn't understand humility born of one constitutional position. He forgot what his relation was. And he was being honored. And there was nothing wrong with Indra being honored, because he is the king of heaven. He has good qualities. He has power. He has ability. He has opulences. And his service is great. But in relationship to his spiritual master, he is like everyone else in relationship to their spiritual master, supposed to act like a menial servant, seeing the spiritual master as the cause of all his good fortune and whatever advancement he can make in spiritual life. So when Brihaspati came in, Indra he noticed his spiritual master. He saw him. But being overwhelmed by his own glories, he failed to act properly. Brihaspati noted that, immediately walked away and left the assembly of the Vaishnavas, or the assembly of all the glory that was surrounding Indy. And he was visibly, what we say, not visibly disturbed, but in his heart he knew that Indra is a rascal, to put it in, we say, mild terms. Now, Indra, immediately, when he saw his spiritual master leave, he realized he made a mistake. Now, and he offers some beautiful prayers within himself that I will, when I see my spiritual master, I will fall at his lotus feet, I will honor him, and I will beg his mercy. But Brihaspati, he understood Indra's intention for rectification, and he became invisible, it says. He didn't allow Indra to make, what we say, retribution or correction of his mentality. That's a good question. Why did Brihaspati not allow? Was he being, what we say, cruel or unfair or without mercy? Actually, he wanted to teach Indra a lesson. Sometimes a spiritual master will give a hard lesson. Just recently, without naming any names, I was approached by one devotee who was asked by his spiritual master to perform one particular service. And in the course of performing that service, he became attached to a young lady. And for him, it wasn't proper because he was about 50 years old, and the lady was about 30 years old. But being in a very, what we say, intimate area of service, their service was very much connected. But then he realized that this is a mistake, and it got back to his spiritual master. So he gave up that attachment, at least externally he did. And he went on with his service. Now, his spiritual master decided that this wasn't good, so he decided to remove him from the service and bring him back to his previous service, which was living outside. Now, he was humble, he was rectifying, he did everything his spiritual master ordered him to do in relationship to this situation. But at the same time, as he communicated to me, his spiritual master was not pleased with him. He was still very heavy, not giving him any, what we say, space to, let's say, well, I made a mistake. He made a mistake, yes, he admitted it. But at the same time, his spiritual master wanted to do something to teach him a deeper lesson about the whole situation. So he approached me for answers. Really, I couldn't give him a clear answer, but I supported his spiritual master. That you may not understand what your spiritual master is doing to you, but you should understand it's correct. And it will be revealed in the future what actually is his intention for your purification, for your rectification. So reluctantly, or not reluctantly, but he accepted it, but I could see it was very difficult for him. So Indra, he wants to make retribution, but Brihaspati disappears. So what happens? The demigods are without a spiritual master. They're without any protection. And then the demons get powerful. The demons attack, and they very systematically defeat the demigods. Now, the demigods are without a spiritual master. So what does he do? Lord Brahma comes. So he approaches Brahma. What can I do? We are powerless. Brihaspati is angry with us. He has relieved his mercy, and therefore we have lost our power. This is another important point. That whatever qualifications or abilities or achievements one has in devotional service, it's by the mercy of the spiritual master. And the spiritual master is very merciful. In fact, he's an ocean of mercy. Samsara dava nalalita loka trinayaka guna gunato patasya kayuna guna navasya bande guroshi charanat. He's like a torrential rain cloud of mercy, pouring the mercy of the Lord on those who take shelter of his lotus feet. But his mercy comes in different ways. So Indra got in the kind of mercy that he wasn't expecting, the hard mercy. But it's all mercy. And therefore, in one sense, he taught them a lesson. That pride is not acceptable. So he got another spiritual master by the grace of Lord Brahma. But what was the other spirit? He got Vishwaroop. Brahma said, approach Vishwaroop. Now Vishwaroop, his father is a demigod, his mother is a demon. His father is a demigod. He got a spiritual master who was partial to the demons, slightly. So now he's in an awkward position. He's taking shelter of Vishwaroop. But Vishwaroop agrees to do his service the best he can to give the power that the demigods need to help to defeat the demons. But still, he's still inclined to the demons. So here, he's performing the service of giving the Narayan Kavacha. And of course, by this service, the demigods were ultimately victorious. So Prabhupada goes on and explains within this purport, which is very interesting point he makes, that there is this eternal struggle between the devas and the asuras. And this struggle, Prabhupada says, it's been going on for a long, long time. Prabhupada uses the word long, long time. In lectures, Prabhupada says, since time immemorial. There's always this constant struggle between these two forces or these two classes of persons. Those who want to act on behalf of religious principles and glorify the Lord and propagate religion in the world, and those who simply want to exploit the energy of the Lord for their own selfish interests for sense gratification. So this struggle is going on eternally. Sometimes people, generally those who practice religion for material benefits, they want to elevate themselves to a better material position. They think by worshiping the Lord that the Lord will provide them better material situations. This is one of the main contaminations in religious history, that people approach God for something material. And the ultimate aspect of that is that they want to go to the higher planets upon leaving this body. They want to attain the heavenly planets and then to enjoy sense gratification uninterruptedly, or at least for a period of a long time with great amounts of enthusiasm and power to enjoy sense gratification. But here, even within the heavenly planets, you find there's fights. Prabhupada says it's not even peaceful there. The demons are attacking the demigods, and you have to fight. So where in the material world can one find a peaceful situation, at least externally? Maybe in Radha Gopinath temple, that we can say for sure, but this is not the material world. We have to qualify that for sure. This is the spiritual world, wherever there is Lord Chaitanya's mercy coming on with great power and enthusiasm, it becomes Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world. But generally, in the material world, wherever there is material activities, even in the greatest amount of sense gratification, it leads to some kinds of calamities, suffering. And there, those who have a great amount of material sense gratification, they have a lot to lose. If you have a little bit of material power, facilities, abilities, you may not be so attached to it, or at least you may not feel such a great calamity when it's lost. But when you have a lot, and it's being taken away, and then you lose it, That could be traumatic upon the heart and mind of a living being. So the demigods, they got a lot, and they're in a traumatic experience. Now they're approaching, for help. So what's interesting, Indra has to become humble. He's humbled by circumstance. Again, back to this point, that cultivation of humility should be based on one's constitutional position. Circumstances are important to help us become humble. But we can't always rely on circumstances. One has to cultivate humility based on knowledge. Knowledge that one actually is insignificant. And even though one may be great, as great as Lord Indra, and have very great qualities, abilities, power, facilities, great amounts of achievements, still, time is there. And time is Krishna. Time is Krishna. That invisible force that brings about and takes away everything in this material world, even the post of Lord Indra, which is for a long, long time by material calculations. So one has to cultivate one's position according to one's to the knowledge based on scriptures. But circumstances can help. Inger is shocked back into his position of becoming dependent. But still, what happens? Well, you'll go on to see it in the next chapter. He becomes upset with his other spiritual master, Vishwarup. He's not. He offends not only Brihaspati, and he's upset with Vishwarup, because Vishwarup is slightly inclined to the demons. And he offers some of the oblations that he performs in sacrifices to the demons for their benefit. So anyway, of course, all glories to Lord Indra. He's great by all standards, and he's a great devotee. He actually worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his own abode. The Lord appears to him in his four-armed form, and he worships the Lord in his abode. But still, we can see what too much material qualifications can brings about a sense of false ego and a sense of pride. If you have a little, it's a little easier to be humble, but if you have a lot, it's hard. It's hard. And humility is the feature which attracts the attention of the Lord. Here, just because of that pride, Indra lost everything. There's one beautiful verse in the previous series of verses. It's verse number 15. It talks about the disqualifications of a disciple. There are five disqualifications of a disciple. What are the five disqualifications? It's mentioned in that verse. Hypocrisy, duplicity, unfaithfulness, disrespect, familiarity. These are the five disqualifications of a disciple. Hypocrisy, what is hypocrisy? One pretends that they're making some show of devotional service, but in their minds they have another program. They're worshiping the Lord and the spiritual master, not for advancement in devotional service, for some personal or material gain. And they consciously cultivate that mood. It's like Prabhupada says sometimes, one accepts the spiritual master simply from just out of formality or some ecclesiastic rule and regulation or in order to be known as a disciple of a good spiritual master like that. A spiritual master's duty is to correct that disciple. If a disciple has that mentality, then he becomes disqualified to execute devotional service. And it's the duty of the spiritual master to correct him. And if he can't correct him, then he must use heavier and heavier means. You see what Brihaspati did. He allowed the demons to defeat the demigods. His own beloved devotees were put into a calamitous position. Heavy mercy, you might say. Really heavy mercy. We might even take issue with Brihaspati. Why did he act so strongly? He could have said, well, you know, all right, you guys made a mistake, and if you don't, just be careful, be good, be humble, I'll forgive you, my power is back. But there is a strong message here that he wanted to teach, that because perhaps we'll understand later what has actually happened or why Brihaspati did that. It's not all being revealed in this section. So hypocrisy, that is one of the disqualification. Duplicity, what is duplicity? Duplicity is similar to hypocrisy, but duplicity is more like a milder form. Not so. It may come out from time to time, but hypocrisy is more like a full-blown program of duplicity. Duplicity is that I may be humble because I don't want to be chastised. not that I'm humble, not so it's good for me to be humble, and I need to be corrected. But I'm humble, so I don't want to be chastised, because it's not good to get chastised. So it's better to be humble, at least externally. External duplicity. What's the third one? Unfaithfulness. One doesn't have full faith in the spiritual master. One takes issue with some of this, what the spiritual master may say or do. Sometimes the statement is given, if Lord Nityananda, he is the original spiritual master, if he walks into a liquor house, one should see that Lord Nityananda is going in simply to preach. And one should not take issue with Lord Nityananda. Prabhupada used to say, my spiritual master is wrong, but he's right. That's hard. One may ask questions, but one should never challenge or have doubts. Doubts are like demons. As soon as doubts arise, one loses faith. Therefore, if ever a doubt ever comes in the mind of a disciple in relationship to the spiritual master, that doubt must be cleared as quick as possible. Because doubts have a tendency to grow. And when they grow, they can become like big, huge obstacles. And then one can even find fault, not only with the spiritual master, but even will find fault with God, with Krishna himself. So unfaithfulness, or the lack of faith. Faith is very important. Faith is the principle of success in spiritual life. Without faith, one cannot make progress in spiritual life. Faith is a result of purity. Srila Prabhupada says, faith comes by purity. So how do you develop faith if it comes by purity? Well, one has to practice the principles that allow faith to manifest. One must hear regularly from the devotees and associate with those who have faith. Gradually, faith will. If you associate with people who have little or no faith, then your faith will also be challenged or will not grow properly. One should very carefully. The fastest way to go down is to associate with people who are critical or have no or little faith. Because that by that association, they can inspire and doubts within our minds. And as soon as doubts go, then one starts to criticize, or one cannot remain enthusiastic. And then after that, one starts to deviate in one's spiritual life. This is called the three stages of degradation. Unholy association, doubts, sinful activity. The three stages of degradation. First, unholy association, or association that is not supportive of our spiritual life. Of course, we associate for preaching, but that's different. We give association. But in our day-to-day life, we associate with those who have faith. Faith is the foundation. The Christians have a really nice saying about faith. It's really nice. They say, faith is the evidence of things yet to come and the proof of things yet unseen. Faith is actually proof of things yet to come and the evidence of things that haven't even been seen yet. Faith is so strong. And bhakti, the principle of bhakti, more than any other process of spiritual elevation, relies on the principle of faith. We have to have faith. Because without faith, how can we remain enthusiastic? How can we remain determined? How can we remain patient? And these are the principles that make devotional service, what we say, successful. So one has to have strong faith. Strong faith. So associating with those who have strong faith in hearing. Another disqualification of a disciple is disrespect. To disrespect the spiritual master. Sometimes This is what Indra did. He didn't give proper respect to the spiritual master. One must know the etiquette. When the spiritual master enters within the room, one immediately pays obeisances. It says even in the temple room, there's an injunction in the scriptures that no one should pay obeisances or give respects to anyone before the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form as a deity. No one should give obeisances. But there is an injunction or a clause that applies to that principle, that when the spiritual master comes, one should, and it is permissible, to pay obeisances to the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master and the Lord are none different. They're none different. So when we're worshiping in the Lord, and when the Lord comes in and is the form of spiritual master, then it's proper to offer honor and respects to the spiritual master, like that. So one should be always respectful. In words, how we speak to the spiritual master, and the way we act in front of the spiritual master, like that. Always be respectful. That's important. And the last one, because when we lose respect, we lose our enthusiasm to serve. Then we become conditional in our service. And we accept things that we like and reject things we don't like when we lose respect. And the last one is familiarity. That a spiritual master may be very friendly and treat the disciple as a friend. And the disciple may also relate back in a very friendly and a very, what we say, routine way. But the disciple in his heart should always keep a sense of awe and reverence. And never take that friendliness and familiarity as an opportunity to become, what we say, less respectful. It can happen very easily. The spiritual master, he loves the disciples just like children. It's like his sons, his daughters. He gives his affection, he gives his time, he gives his mercy. He'll do whatever he can to help his disciples in their spiritual growth. And many times, even in that interaction, it becomes very familiar. But a disciple should always know that I always keep my respect and honor for my spiritual master, like that. So these are the five ways that one can, what we say, transgress the proper etiquette of a true disciple. And this is the most important part of our Krishna consciousness, how we relate to the spiritual master, because everything is situated on that. The spiritual master is very merciful, but we should not take advantage of his mercy and that assume that the mercy is there. Therefore, we sing, Ha Ha Prabhu Kora Daya Deha More Parachaya. In that prayer, we sing to the spiritual master, we're begging, we're crying, we're pleading. Please, my dear Guru Maharaj, please give me your mercy. Please give me your mercy. Because begging for the mercy, praying for the mercy, means that one becomes qualified to receive the mercy. I think Radhanath Maharaj made a statement that stuck in my mind about this point, that if you don't think you need mercy, I mean, if you can't cry for the mercy, that means actually you think you don't need it. We have to actually realize we need mercy. And mercy is the constant feature of our success in devotional service. Mercy is everything. It's the Lord's way of allowing for our inabilities to be overcome and give us the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Everything depends on mercy. Now, the demigods, they lost the mercy of their spiritual master. They were defeated. They're in a very humiliating circumstances. They're also quite wounded in battle. They're suffering also in that category too. So this was a very strong form of mercy by Brihaspati. So this is to teach. These stories, the pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam are the personification of the spiritual principles in order to teach these principles in a very powerful way. That if one becomes proud, if one loses the spirit, the mercy of the spiritual master, everything becomes lost. Shrama evi kevalam, everything becomes useless. There's one beautiful prayer. My dear Lord, with your mercy, what is the use of having the mercy of others? And my dear Lord, without your mercy, what is the use of having the mercy of others? So the spiritual master's mercy is everything, and that is the Lord's mercy. And without that mercy, we don't want mercy anywhere else. We want the mercy coming from the Lord and the spiritual master. Prabhupada says that the devotees are like chitaka birds. Chitaka birds are the birds that fly near the clouds, and they only drink water from the cloud. They'll never go to the ground or any other place. There's water everywhere. There's water on the ground. There's water in the lakes and in the ponds. That chitaka bird will only drink water from directly from the cloud. And if the cloud does not release the water, the bird will wait and not go anywhere else. So a devotee is like that. Sometimes we feel in our devotional service, I'm trying so hard, but still I'm not making any advancement. What is it? Maybe I'm not getting the mercy. What is it about my devotional service? Sometimes one has to become patient and continue to try. I know one devotee, not a devotee, he's a practitioner. He's up-and-coming bhakta. I've known him for a few years. He approaches devotional service. He puts the Lord on trial. He has a tendency to engage in devotional service, and he has expectations. And when the expectations are not fulfilled, he loses his enthusiasm. He loses his practice in devotional service. He becomes unhappy. He likes devotees. He likes the philosophy. He likes everything about it. But still, he's in the position of testing the Lord. He is expecting that, come on, Lord, now I'm chanting, now I'm enthusiastic, now I'm doing everything. Where's the mercy? But see, that's his mentality. And behind, he's looking for something material from everything. He's expecting something. Where's the bliss? Where's no bliss? I'm trying my hardest. Where I am not getting bliss. Every else was blissful. And then he quits. So I preach to him, I say, you got to be patient. You can't demand from God. God is not our all or supplier. God is our order giver. Right? So Krishna tests us to see how sincere we are. Sometimes we're doing everything externally right, but internally our consciousness is not right. And therefore, it's not so much the external thing that needs to be rectified. It's the consciousness. The consciousness is that I should simply try to serve the Lord for the pleasure of the Lord. That's all. Serve the devotees for the pleasure of the devotees. Serve for the sake of service. Serve for the sake of pleasing. That is the proper mentality. And then that allows for the Lord's mercy to come. Like that. This is a wonderful pastime. It's very, very instructive pastime. It teaches us that one has to be humble. One cannot become proud. Any questions? Yes, Chaitanya Jiva? Could you speak really loud? I have, yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. You spoke about respect when the spiritual master comes into the temple room. I've seen different practices within different temples. of the deities being the curtains are open, the deities are there to see, and everybody in the middle of a prayers or the program will suddenly bow down to the spiritual master who's walked in. So I was doing this for some years at Bhaktivedanta Manor, along with many others. And it was said to me by said to us in a class by Sridhar Maharaj that when the spiritual master walks in, you just internally offer obeisances. You don't physically get down onto the ground, because there you have the Lord right in front of you. Now, who are you now honoring? So there was this, and he also said when he has a class, when the curtains open and somebody's giving class, while the class was being given, somebody, many people would bow down in the middle of the class while it was being spoken. So it would disrupt the whole flow. But still I see many people doing that. Can you tell me which is the appropriate? Because Sridhar Maharaj was very much against it, but still people feel compelled to honor and offer their obeisances, specifically when they see a spiritual master.
Hare Krishna. For the sake of, we say, protocol, or how best the functions go on, certain considerations could be there. But if a devotee somehow, by his natural affection, humility, spontaneously offers respects, it can't be considered to be wrong or out of place, because that's natural. But to honor in the mind is sufficient. It's sufficient. One can simply make, but if you don't do it any, if you don't honor in the mind, or if you don't make any gesture at all, then that is considered a discretion in consciousness. So I can accept, I 100% agree with that principle. But you can't chastise devotees if they spontaneously somehow or other offer respects to their spiritual master. It's not a kind of thing where you're out of place, but it's better for the functions to go on more naturally. So do it in the mind, but if it comes out in the other way, it's not wrong, but for the sake of protocol, it seems like doing it in the mind would be proper, would be sufficient. That is sufficient. Anybody else? Any other questions? Oh, okay.
You were speaking about humility earlier, and I've heard that it's important to distinguish between actual humility and crushed false ego.
Yeah.
So if you have crushed false ego instead of humility, is there any practical advice you can give of how to transform it or overcome it?
If you have crushed false ego, what? How do you transform that? Yeah. The question is, I missed one part also, that if you're being crushed, your false ego is being crushed, and you become humbled by that. How do you transform that into real humility? Well, if you keep getting crushed, it's not the idea. I mean, you could, just keep bouncing back and getting crushed each time. After a while, we should learn that this is not the way to become humble. Humility means a transformation of consciousness. And so transformation of consciousness comes by purification of the heart by practicing the process and by cultivating the qualities of humility. So one should cultivate those qualities. In fact, that is a constant feature of practicing devotional service. There's one verse that in speech, in action, in all activities, one should cultivate the mood of humility. Trinadapi Sunice Nam. That Lord Chaitanya emphasized this verse. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami glorified this verse. That this verse, humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for others, is the mood of a Vaishnav. It's the mood. So we have to practice that mood. And at the same time, cultivate the principles of our position. If you're just doing it externally, you also have to know that you're trying to reach what is actually your position. To be humble is natural. To be proud is, the word madha, M-A-D-A, is madness. And madness is transformed as pride, translated as pride. Prabhupada said that. The word madha means pride, and pride means madness. So anyone who's proud, they're mad. It's a form of madness because you're acting different than what you are. It's a feature of the bodily conception of life. So to be humble is natural because the soul is by nature jiva. It's small. It's tiny. So when we cultivate knowledge and we practice the principles that are conducive to developing humility, then we're actually trying to reach our natural position. It's not artificial. But if we have to learn our lessons by being crushed each time, then at one point, if you don't cultivate the actual mood or the knowledge, you'll just get tired of being crushed. And you'll just go somewhere else or you'll do something different where you won't be crushed anymore. Yeah, right? It's too hard to live in association of devotees. So I'll go outside. So and then I can have my false ego. Okay? Anyone else? Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.